Welcome to Design Thinking Games, a gaming and user experience podcast. Card-carrying UXers Tim Broadwater and Michael Schofield examine the player experience of board games, pen and paper role-playing games, live-action games, and video games. Play through the backlog on your podcatcher of choice and on the web at designthinkinggames.com.
Design thinking is a process that is used to understand users, challenge assumptions, redefine problems, and create innovative solutions. In this podcast, we apply design thinking to gaming. So for anyone who doesn't know you, can you introduce yourself and give us like the elevator pitch of Sophia Prater?
Yeah, sure. Hi, I'm Sophia Prater, and I consider myself the chief evangelist for something I call object-oriented UX. I teach OOUX at companies. I go in and do workshops. Recently, I've done workshops for Microsoft and Adobe, did a talk with Google. And so big brands, also small agencies. So I do a lot of teaching object-oriented UX. I have a masterclass and a certification. So a lot of my focus is teaching this 10-week object-oriented UX course. So I teach a lot. I've somehow turned from a designer into a teacher. I'm actually getting kind of back into design now. I was started my career in consulting. I started my career at Accenture and then went to other smaller consulting companies. The only place I was ever internal was at CNN.com. And so that was back in 2011, 2012. And that's kind of where everything started with object-oriented UX when responsive design came onto the scene. And I was at CNN and I got put into the role, funny enough, for my very good actor skills. I got put into the, because I was really fast at prototyping, and I got put into the position of doing the 2012 election results. And so this was around June of 2012, and we kind of woke up and we're like, oh, we need to design what's going to happen in November on CNN.com. And the powers that be at CNN decided that this was going to be a responsive experience. It would be the first responsive experience that CNN had done ever. So it was like this incredibly short timeline. I think I had like 4 days to get first wireframes in. And this is really kind of where all of this thinking started, where I really started thinking modularly. I started thinking about repeatable, reusable elements and kind of how to create a simple system, a simple and elegant system of reusable parts. The adage of the more moving parts, the more likely it is to break. My engineering grandfather's voice was like echoing in my head. And I was just thinking, oh my gosh, I do not want this thing to break. It's so high profile. You know, the millions, hundreds of millions of people would see that design. So I really kind of got... I really prioritized prioritization during that project, and it was a success. It worked really well. It got me on the speaking circuit, so I started having to then teach what happened, which was interesting in its own right. To have, you know, to go through something, have it be a success, and then have to talk about it and give a case study on it, then it makes you analyze and makes you think what went right and what went wrong in a really intentional way. And so I started really kind of developing the process from there through having to teach it at conferences and workshops, and, you know, just kind of one thing led to another. And 10 years later, my entire career is basically built around object-oriented UX, teaching it, sharing it, and practicing it with my clients.
Awesome. How is, what would you describe, or what would you say was really that first step that is like, this is OOUX, this is kind of the package?
Yeah, I think that like the things that start, if I can like put my finger on like when things really started to click, I wasn't calling it object-oriented UX. I didn't start calling it object-oriented UX until like 2015-ish. But back in 2012, when I was working on the election results, one, I realized that, I was tasked by the product manager to first design the state detail page. So they had already organized all their sprints page by page. They had looked at the 2008 design. They broke up the sprint based on page. So the state detail page, like California, Georgia, Ohio, where you would see the state level results. That was what the first sprint was going to be. And they were like, okay, we only have 4 days. We only need one design. We only need one screen. Of course, we need like mobile and tablet and desktop screens, but all we need is a state detail page. So it's really not, we're not asking that much of you. And I realized I was trying to design a cog in the machine without understanding the machine and how dangerous that was. And I realized like, shit, this is not the best way to work. I could get away with this before responsive design, kind of designing like myopically. But with responsive design, I really want to create that library of parts. So I had to think about the whole freaking system to do that. And that's when things really started to click for me. And I started thinking about what are the concepts within the elections. And I also realized like, I'm not designing anything. I am not designing the information architecture for how our government works. Like I just need to discover it and reflect it in the as truthfully as possible.
Not going back too much like in time, but if I'm looking at little Sophia Prater, and then how she decided she wanted to do UX or was doing it, and then it happened to be UX. I mean, how did you even get your first foot in UX or knew that it was something you wanted to do?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me that, because this is a UX and Games podcast. So I mean, when I look back on, we can go far back. When I look back on like what I was like my play when I was a kid, I was designing games. I was designing little maps. I would make these like floor plans. Sometimes I would make the floor, like my dream house floor plan, but often I would make like theme parks, or I would make like a playground or something like that, or a summer camp. I would like design my favorite little summer camp, and it would be my dream summer camp. And it would have like all the different areas, and I would have like little people going around. So I would design these environments. I would also like take the card games that I already had, and I would remix them and remix parts to create games for my friends to play. So like a lot of the play that my friends and I would play were games that I designed. And then so I ended up in industrial design, because that was like kind of the way, I didn't know if I was going to be doing gaming. I wasn't really into video games. I was more like physical games, board games and card games. Really liked card games. But yeah, so I decided to go into industrial design because that seemed like the closest fit to use my creativity in a way that was like, that was using my, and I don't want this to come out wrong, using my like problem solving skills too, you know, because art is just for you, right? And then, but if you're creating something for something else, for somebody else within constraints, that engages more of that problem solving part of my brain. So industrial design seemed like a good fit. And then I graduated in 2008 when nobody could get a job, and definitely not industrial design. Had to like move into my parents' basement, the whole nine yards, but ended up getting a very early UX design job. It was actually my title was UE analyst, because we weren't calling it UX yet.
I remember those. Yeah, that was interesting.
So I, like probably a lot of people, got my first exposure to OOUX from like a list apart. And now it's so, like you said, there's classes now, and it's just grown so much to this day. And I'm sure you've given this pitch like many times, but for someone who has no understanding of what OOUX is, what is the sentence or the elevator pitch or for dummies version?
Yeah, it's just object-oriented UX is basically a philosophy that respects the fact that people think in objects, that when you go into an environment that you've never been in, what your visual cortex is doing, whether you have a visual impairment or not, your visual cortex is still lighting up, and it's trying to identify the things in that environment. And it's trying to identify the relationships between those things through gestalt and overlapping and proximity. It's using all those tools to help you navigate that environment, by first saying, okay, what are the things in this environment? What, how do they sit together in context? What are my relationships to those things? What can I do to those things? What things are mine? What things are other people's? What things are dangerous? What things are edible? So this is basically goes back to our brains evolving in the physical world. And we still have mm-hmm. those same brains that evolved for a very long time in the physical world. But what happens is we go into these digital worlds, and when we design digital worlds, these digital worlds are not beholden to the laws of physics. So often objects change shape arbitrarily. Two objects that are completely different might look exactly the same, because if the UX designer is not being very, very intentional about making sure that we are breaking the laws of physics in the right way. So we want to break the laws of physics that turn our users into superheroes, right? That make them like be in two places at once and like do on like undo, like, oh my gosh, undo. Amazing breaking the laws of physics. How many times do you like drop a glass and you're like, where's my control Z? You know, I want to bring that into the real world. But what we do is we break laws of physics in ways that confuse people and make things harder. And we just really want to respect certain laws of physics to make sure people don't get confused, and then mm-hmm. break laws of physics in the right way. And that's really what OUX is about. It's a set of laws and methodologies to make sure that we are being strategic in how we break those laws of physics in the digital world.
Nice. I remember the kind of zeitgeist that like, you know, object-oriented UX came up in, this kind of like early, I guess it's not early in the scheme of things, but I remember like responsive design, like when that was like the keynote topic of just about every conference in like 2011, mm-hmm. 2012, 2013. And around this time of like object-oriented UX, to your point about like developing like this responsive feature for CNN, it really felt like a time where the art direction or the look and feel aspect of like a design or whatever, like suddenly had to become like metadata rich. And that's how I always took like the object of like OUX in there, is where you have something like a carousel, the bane of all existence. But there is like a series of properties and interactions that kind of like define that are bullet points in a Word doc in a way, or, you know, columns in a spreadsheet, or rows in the database thing here. I'm just saying, like, I remember that like really transformational like time where we all started going from what can we do on the web in terms of like powers of CSS and like what can we design, to slowly gravitating toward what ended up what's now like componentization and design systems, like thinking of really tiny chunks of design pieces that get puzzled together. And there's just more intention and architecture involved in the work of design and the work of user experience provision that really kind of got its start back in this time, you know, where you kind of relaunched OUX and all that.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, there was like, I mean, Brad Frost and Atomic Design, and we really started thinking about like this is the kind of the very beginning of pattern libraries and design systems, and we really started thinking more modularly. And I mean, my very first OUX workshop, I wasn't using that term yet. I called it responsive redesign in a day, and I was calling it modular design because that's what I thought I was doing. Mm. And then the more I learned about what Brad Frost was doing, I was like, this is freaking awesome. But this is not what I'm doing. This is what that's very at the UI level, you know, that when we think about, okay, well, how can we like put these components together and make reusable components? I'm thinking about reusable concepts. And what are those concepts? What are those components representing? What is in the carousel, right? Like we can have the best carousel in the whole world, you know, as much as a carousel has a bad rap, but like, or the best, I always give the example, like the best calendar picker in the whole world, but nobody's coming to your site for carousels and calendar pickers, or they're not even coming to the site for bullet points. Like, what are they actually coming for? Are they coming for tutorials? Are they coming for games? Are they coming for video explainers? Are they coming from on the game theme, right? Like, are they coming for game designers? Like, what are the things that they're actually coming for, and how do those things work together? And then we can think about all those components that represent those things.
It's super interesting, like, because this is where I get wonky too. There are some people out there who, like, some early work that's really hard to parse. It's maybe too academic, but like Majid Iqbal's like Thinking in Services, where the I love his idea. I don't know how practical it is, but the idea that you could componentize the content or concept object to a point where you can have a bunch of little concepts and then puzzle together a full-fledged product from it without knowing what the end user product is.
I mean, that is very similar to what we do. Usually we're going to start off with some kind of goal. Like, definitely we want to know what outcome is the user looking for? What is the business trying to do? And then it's going into like breaking it down to like, what are the concepts that make that up before going into what are people going to be doing to those concepts? We often start with the verbs without thinking about the nouns. So this is all about like, okay, let's get really clear on what those nouns are. And then we can say, okay, and now that we know what the nouns are, now let's think about what people want to do to those things in this particular context. And then we can kind of iterate back and forth on that. I think with our industry, we think about the verbs, we think about the adjectives, the nouns, we think about the end user. Yeah, we do. But like the actual concepts that are in the system, there is not a good, rigorous process for that, except for, I guess, what I'm teaching. I haven't seen a very, very rigorous process for how do you define the nouns and how do you figure out how the nouns and verbs click together into a system. The other person that's working on this, I'll shout out to Daniel Rosenberg of UX Magic. His book is great. And he talks about UX grammar, which is very similar. Mm-hmm. And a lot of content strategists are doing this too, but they're doing it in the content strategy space, not as much in the product design space. So
I would agree with you. Yeah. I feel like I've used OOUX for nonprofits. I've used it for corporate e-commerce. I even helped a school counselor who came to me years ago, and they're like, I have this thing that I do and I just don't know how to make it into an app or a web interface. But I need to associate a kid with a classroom, and then they have parents, and then they have an assessment, and then you need to be able to look at filter information in so many ways, and this is the content, and this is the metadata, and this is the interaction that I need to make. And I'm like, there's actually like a formula for success here. It's called OOUX, and we can literally follow it. And it's easy for people, I think, to understand once they kind of can wrap their head around it.
Design Thinking Games is a proud affiliate of Hunt a Killer. Enter the world of Hunt a Killer in their newest murder mystery season, Mallory Rock. This realistic murder mystery game delivers high-quality, handcrafted evidence that brings a fictional case to life. Can you solve a mystery with Hunt a Killer? Go to designthinkinggames.com/huntakiller or click on the banner at the bottom of our website.
So how did this kind of
how did OOUX become a game, right?
How did this teaching of like a conceptual framework for product design or underscore design become a game? When did you start gamifying?
Yeah, I mean, I think I started gamifying it from day one, basically, like when I first started. Like my very first workshop at UX Strategy, UX Strat conference in Boulder. And then I did UX Week right after that. That was 2014, the responsive redesign in a day. And we were doing a very kind of like preliminary form of object mapping, which is color-coded sticky notes. So we already had the color coding in there. And it was kind of like a crossword puzzle. So you know how now we have the columns in the object map. So I might need to like verbally describe an object map, but basically you have all these columns that show for every object you have a column, and then you have all the metadata and the core content, and then you're also showing the nested objects. You're showing those relationships between all the different columns or objects. It's just a really powerful artifact and powerful diagram to kind of give you this X-ray vision. But the very first version of that was done as a kind of a crossword puzzle. So you started with one object. And then once you hit a piece of an attribute that was actually another object, then you would branch off. Right. And then when you would hit another nested object, another attribute that was another object. So for example, I always use the example of like events. So like, let's say I'm mapping out the event and I have the title of the event, the place, the location, the time of the event, the description of the event. And then I have people going to the event and I'm like, oh, person is an object. So that I would go off to the right and I would start saying first name, last name, you know, username, date, whatever, interest tags or something like that. So it was already like in the very beginning, object mapping was this very kind of collaborative game-like thing, kind of thinking about a crossword puzzle. And then mm-hmm. I kind of, you know, that didn't make too much sense because then you would hit, you know, people, you'd hit the events that this person is going to and you draw an arrow back up and it just kind of was a mess. So it just kind of got cleaned up throughout the years as you're constantly iterating on it. OOUX and the processes and all of the methodologies that I teach around OOUX is very playful. It's just a hell of a lot of fun. And that's the feedback that I get is that, I mean, I've heard people say that like this has made UX fun for them again, because mm-hmm. not only does it like take a lot of the headaches away, because this is a tool for understanding at the end of the day. And so often we're told to design without understanding. And that's really frustrating for the type of people that go into UX. We like to understand stuff, and then we're constantly being thrown into situations where we just have to design without understanding it. This was like the first 5 years of my career, which would send me home crying on a daily basis. And I was so frustrated out of my mind. And so, I mean, not only does it help bring a lot of those headaches, you know, I eliminate a lot of those headaches and help with collaboration and help expose that complexity to your stakeholders and to your business who, you know, sometimes they don't get how complicated something is. So like, just give me some screens by Friday, or how interconnected things are actually. Mm-hmm. So it helps bring that forward. It helps bring the business and the developers together in a way that is just really fun and playful. And so I don't know how I decided to like make it into a card game. I think it was just like, one night. Yeah, I think I just got inspired and who knows where ideas come from. And I prototyped it on some index cards, some colored, wow. You know, I had index cards and I prototyped it and I kind of like, you know, play tested. And I was like, wow, I'm kind of onto something here. And I made it way too complicated to begin with. And it was really a matter of play testing with so many people and simplifying and taking things out and taking things out and taking things out to make it what it is now. But yeah, I spent about 2 years play testing it with wow. lots of and iterating on it before actually launching it. And I've since taken it off the market, but we are relaunching it later this year.
Yeah, I just naturally assumed that it's like, oh, this, you're teaching so many workshops and you're doing so many sessions that this came out of like, this is something that I need to have for workshops. I had no idea that it actually came out from, well, now that you spoke a little bit about how you like to design amusement parks and like games, and then this is kind of a great marriage of this understanding system as well as it. As a game, how would you, one of the things about our podcast is, you know, we try to focus on the player experience of like a game. And if you had to describe to people like a player who's never kind of sat down to play this game, what's it kind of like for them?
What is the player experience? So player experience is basically what you do is you start with your objects and you get a smattering of objects to pick from. And you start off with a person, a content type and a thing. And you basically pull these three objects together. So I think when you play tested, you had teachers create complaints about animals.
Yes.
Right, Tim? So like there's just a bunch of different funny words and it kind of creates this sentence of people create something about something. So it kind of creates a little bit of a story and a little bit of a system. So you decide what your objects are. And then you have another smattering of cards, which I call the whiteboard, where you're basically picking attributes out of that. So you take turns picking attributes to fill out and to make structure around your objects. So you might, for For animals, you might put popularity on there, or for complaint, you might put date and time on there, or for the person, you might grab a picture for a profile picture for the teacher. And so you start to kind of build out that structure. Kind of where it gets really interesting is there's also these cross-linking cards. So you start building connections between them. You want to get the card that lets you say that a teacher has many complaints that they've created about the animals, and that an animal has many complaints created about it, that a complaint has one teacher that created it, and a complaint has one or maybe many animals that it's about. So that's just one kind of silly example. I love that example. And then you basically have to pitch it. There's other parts where you hire team members. So you actually, to draw attributes, you need to hire information architects, you need to hire content strategists, you need to hire UX designers to be able to draw the green cards, which are your interactions. And you say, okay, I'm going to add a like interaction to the complaint, or I'm going to add a follow interaction to the teacher. And you basically build a system and then add up points. And the point system works in a way that it basically leads you toward a better design. The more points that you get, the better your design is. But there's a lot of storytelling in there too. So as you select these attributes, you kind of have to validate it and say, why are you putting this attribute there? And then hopefully at the end, you can pitch a pretty fun and maybe even viable product that you might decide you want to go and create.
That's one thing that I thought was really quite interesting was, at some point this with the goal to create enough or to get the highest score, the quality of like the product actually improves.
It's the intention.
You are creating a quality product that is, and then the team that you're building is essential to help move the product around or to be able to work on those certain parts. And then kind of the end is, apart from all these pieces and at some point you're done, and then it's a totaling game, kind of like, Lords of Waterdeep or Ticket to Ride. And so in the end, the most effective and, user interface or product you build or what have you, you actually have a rank and a score, and then the high score wins.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, my favorite part was, I think, probably the entire startup poaching or entrepreneurial meta game where, you can poach your opponent's you put your opponents like best actors. You can power up your like UX folks with coffee. there's a lot there that's like really fun that, you can I think probably by dint of it, like kind of like emerging from countless hours of like workshopping this object map, it just it feels really legit to working in UX professionally. And that's one of the things that's not always true. It's like when you're playing like Lords of Waterdeep, you're not that analogous to, a prince in Faerun or something like that. But this feels like a lot of the work that you end up actually doing like in a professional like UX role, which is kind of fascinating.
I didn't think my job would be fun. Yeah. I mean, I played it and I was just like, it's funny when you say like you're stressed and you kind of get beat down in UX, especially in the tech industry, right? It's super stressful. And, and so actually this game is super fun and it's enjoyable, and it makes me, I love like all of the, the design and the graphic pieces to it, and then the way that it operates. And then it actually doesn't take that long to play either. So it actually has a finite number of rounds. And then once your whiteboard is kind of you've run out of things for the whiteboard, the game's over.
Yeah, there's a deadline.
I love that the deadline is your budget, and the funness of the game, it totally correlates to just how much money you have.
How do people stay connected to you, and how do they find out about the game, and how do they get a hold of a copy for themselves to play?
Yeah, for sure. So if you're interested in getting a copy, head over to oouX.com/crosslinked. And then really, you know, oouX.com is going to be the best place to go. I'm also on Twitter at sophiavux.com. Yeah, and if you're interested in the masterclass and really kind of diving into this and going through the doozy of the online course that we've got, that's going to be oouX.com/masterclass.
Nice.
Not to keep plugging the things you do, but you also, I think, like relatively recently and like in the last quarter or so, like relaunched your podcast too, right?
We actually just put the podcast on hold, but
the podcast
has so much going on. So yes, there is a podcast as well. So we got to, I think, 33 episodes. There was a little bit of a break in there, and then it's just got so much going on. And as you know, it's a lot of work putting on a podcast. So that's on hold till the end of the year. But yes, I mean, really those first two episodes of the podcast is a great primer. There's like, what is OUX? It's basically a revamped version of that first original List Apart article. And then the second episode is an audio workshop. So like pen and paper recommended, and it actually kind of takes you through a design challenge. So it's a really great way to kind of get your hands dirty with it.
Cool.
What other things can we plug that are now defunct?
Because it's coming back. Please subscribe to the podcast. The podcast is definitely, it is just on pause right now for a few months.
Gotcha.
Thank you so much for kind of, I'm going to say thank you for OOUX because I've used it many times and it's been very helpful to me. It's a great kind of understanding framework. The game is super fun. It's a blast. And I would say for gamers as well as for UXers, definitely check it out. So thank you so much for coming on our episode.
Thanks so much for having me. It was really fun.
Guys, playtesting is hard. If you've ever done that, you know how much of a struggle it can be. And if you haven't, you need to. It's part of good game design. That's why I'm super happy that this season of Design Thinking Games is brought to you by Playtest Kit. Literally playtestkit.com, which is designed by Steve Bromley to help us draw reliable, evidence-based conclusions that inform our design decisions. It gives us all the templates and guidance that we need to test prototypes, recruit, pick the right method, interview people, write surveys, and most importantly, configure and analyze the data so that we can do something useful with it. So whether you've never run a playtest before or you're a pro, this kit is going to save you time and help you get more value from each test you run. So sign up for free resources or go to get the full kit at playtestkit.com. And for the rest of the season, this season only of Design Thinking Games, use the code DESIGNTHINKING to get 10% off and let Steve know who sent you.
It's the Moonlighter Minute brought to you by Design Thinking Games. I have no idea.
Oh, thank you, Tim. perfect handoff, Tim. This the weather out here is hurricane-y. All right. So at the beginning of the season, you prompted me to undertake a task in response to a challenge I gave you the season prior. You had to play through Mass Effect, the legendary edition. You did. We talked about it. I had to play, because of my relative lack of experience in this kind of genre, a roguelike kind of like dungeon crawl thing. And that was Moonlighter, which I'm going to hereby rename as like the anti-nature Zelda. Like
the anti-nature pro-capitalist Zelda.
Knowing that I was coming close to beating it, I busted out a journal and started just kind of like documenting a bunch of thoughts.
The roguelike episode, if you want to check it out, we actually I think we unpack and spend a decent amount of time talking about Moonlighter. What I want to know is, how big is the journal you wrote down? And then what are your thoughts of the game? Like, would you like it, don't like it? Or like, and then here in the last couple of weeks, you just beat it?
I sprinted through it. So here's my thoughts. I only have like a couple pages of just like scratch, and I've actually I have a Windows notepad.exe translation of just all of this. But I got to say, I like it. If I had to give this like a score, like out of 10, this is a grade out of 10, right? This is an 8. I found it pretty endearing. The things that here's what I like about it. I discovered that I love town building and like investing in the town and building up that town and kind of like managing the shop. And my trajectory of how I played is that I got carried away. So there's four dungeons. There's like a golem dungeon, a forest dungeon, a desert dungeon, and then like a tech dungeon. And then there's like a special secret one at the end. And basically what happened, I found that the way I played is like, I ground through as quickly as possible the first two dungeons purely so I could pop like make money and unlock different characters. And then that's all I did. I was just managing my shop and I never went back to the dungeons.
Do you ever feel like it was like workaholic, the game? Like, it's like, I'm running a shop during the day and I'm adjusting my profits and trying to get the best deal and supply and demand, right? But and then the part where you build up the town, but then you don't sleep. It's like you go to and you work your night too.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's very like user experience design, because like you stalk your customers and all of a sudden they have a user experience and you toggle it back and forth. And what I love most is like when they have like a wonderful experience, that means you're charging too little.
Make that money. Yeah.
The perfect degree of user experience is like moderately okay, right? You don't want a great user experience because you're not making them suffer enough. But my trajectory is that like I ended up doing that, and then I just trailed off because like schedules happened, school restarted. Yeah. And then I finally like knowing like, okay, I'm gonna beat this game, I just totally flipped my strategy. I was like, all right, my town's doing pretty well, I'm just gonna grind through these dungeons. And so I would say that my experience of the game was sort of unbalanced. They felt like two very different games to me. That were very creative. Like, I mean, like my favorite dungeon was the desert one. Like there are those like the djinn that throw fireballs and the big old snake like boss is devastating.
It's interesting you said that, because I kind of want to hear more of your thoughts about that, because very similar to a lot of other roguelike games. And I know in previous episodes, you know, since we talked about Moonlighter, we've talked about Call of the Lamb. And it is very much a cult sim, but then it's a dungeon adventure grind as well. Moonlighter being like the products you sell in your store, you're literally getting on your dungeon crawls. And so it is like, I think there's something there. And then there's also the town building piece, right? And so I feel like it's kind of three games wove together, but it's enjoyable to switch between them. What did you think?
I got tired of the dungeons. There's like a dungeon crawl, and I generally don't gravitate toward those. And then there's basically like a roller coaster tycoon game, right? because you're managing the town. And
ages you, just by the way, by saying roller coaster tycoon. Sorry.
I get it. I found that I got tired clearing the rooms and inventory managing. which I know is like just like it's just a big part of the thing. And then I would mess up and then I would die. For me, the missing component was that in the town, I can hire workers. I feel like I should have become rich enough and then hire an adventuring party to go do the dungeon for me. That would have been like a vastly different game. But I have like a lot of thoughts.
That's actually a big mechanic of Monster Hunter. Like I don't know if you've ever played Monster Hunter. It's like,
never played it. Yeah.
Get these felines. And so there's the sim game and you can dress them and name them and whatever. And that's, but then they go, you can equip them and they can go out and harvest and kill monsters for you. And then you don't have to kind of keep going out and killing monsters because they're kind of this ready supply or they can do it. But you were saying feelings about that.
Yeah. Like, so like, I don't know. Like, so that part, there were components on both ends that became chores to me. And as we kind of like talked over the last couple of season, I prefer a very linear game that is minimal chore. And because other people find like kind of like that kind of work fairly meditative, right? Boom, boom, bing. But for me, like I was like, I got tired of running the shop. But then it's literally at that moment, I was like, I can hire somebody. And I still really enjoyed like building out the town. But I say that like, so...
Of the three, you enjoyed the town building the most as opposed to the capitalist shop or the dungeon crawl killing, you know?
Yeah, I enjoyed the town building the most because, like, Moonlighter does some, like, things excellently. In fact, most of the things it does, I would say, are expertly executed. I have notes here just about the interface. The tutorial was cute. The end story, the twist at the end, about like it's like you don't think these artifacts appeared in these dungeons just like that. You know, like I mean, there were things here that were like really good, and to me this is a great example of like a grade in class, or like I don't know if you'd call it best in class because I haven't played enough, but like a great example of a genre of game that is just not necessarily my cup of tea.
When you were talking about the UI, you were like, great game. You're like, I was into it, but UI, what were the things you were picking up on?
The UI was excellent. So the look and feel of the game, you know, the graphics were great, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm kind of talking about like there's certain things that I found incredibly effective. In part, you know, the customer experiences and like in the shop and how you were able to come around and do that. They made some really smart choices for inventory management, for bulk moving things like back and forth. The when you encountered something new, the tutorial was like a horizontal scroll, like a papyrus scroll that opens like left to right, and it was basically step one, step two, step three in pixel art emojis, kind of, right? It wasn't like a they introduced concepts and mechanics quite easily. And so there are things there that I just found it impressive, like just being the kind of work that I do. Like I saw what maybe other people would just see as kind of like the chrome of the game, the utilitarian aspects.
You saw the interaction design.
I saw the interaction design and I was like, this was excellently done. Excellently done.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I agree with that too. The bulk object management, the ability to just walk around like you're saying and on the fly be like, no, raise that $2 or no, put that down $2 so it sells better. And just great. Yeah.
There are little things that are really convenient. Like, oh no, like I'm out of inventory. It was like, well, if you've done your job and you have a little bit of coin, they let you teleport back, right? You know, so everything has like a cost and they give you little, not cheats, but they give you ways out of what would otherwise be painful situations.
And grindy, horrible experiences. Yeah. If you have these horrible, I find that if you have like these What it does very well, I agree with you, is that these repetitive, horrible things like inventory management or like traveling or being able to save or like there's, if this doesn't work, what's the workaround? So it doesn't make me hate the game as a user, but it actually allows me like, okay, how do I just do this quicker or gain it or do it as simple as possible?
We should give the opening scene like a lot of credit because you're just dropped into a dungeon and it's a dungeon you're not meant to survive and it whoops your ass. It teaches you like how to kind of do that like kind of shoulder roll thing around and how to use the basic mechanics. Mm-hmm. And it takes you, I don't know, like 5 minutes or whatever, and then it dumps you into the story and you're pretty set from there. The mechanics don't get more complicated ever, like after mm-hmm. that. Like there's something here like with like the player experience model where mechanics could potentially stack and get more complicated. I'm imagining games where like, oh, it's like now you have a grappling hook for an arm and you can traverse and you can actually do more than you could before.
Yeah.
And then what I think Moonlighter did, which is the alternative, is that the mechanics for a category of actions actually never really change. Mm-hmm. They just give you more actions. They just give you way more things to do. Now you manage this town. Now you hire people. Now you can invest because there's a broker wandering around town. And that's the kind of thing that I like really dug. Yeah. So I was like, here's 1,000 gold. Please give me a good return, you know?
Okay. So you're going in these dungeons, like you're saying, at night. And then in the day, you're like stocking your shop and raising profit. And if you oversaturate your market with too much of the same thing, prices go down and you have to lower. But the shit you're selling is weird as fuck, right? And then you kind of find out over time, once you go through 3 or 4 dungeons, you've beat the game. So you know what's at the end and what the story is, right?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Was that like a smack in the face for like fantasy games? Or like, what did you think?
No, I loved it. So yeah, so basically, you know, but what I love is that, no one ever questions like in these other kinds of games. Like we spent the entire like last like episode prior to this, like dogpiling on Elden Ring. No one wonders. It's like, oh, why are there so many artifacts in these random ass dungeons? It's like, but I liked it. I thought it was funny. I did one of those guffaws like, ha, like just because, nice. It was clever. Like everything about it was clever. I liked Xenon, like the old guy. I had some favorite characters. I don't think I loved, there's kind of like a crafting element to it, kind of in a way that you could go to get potions made and stuff like that. Like
I never did that so much either. Yeah.
Same. Yeah. I don't need a ton of that in my life. But I think overall, like a really successful game. I feel like I have been introduced to a solid candidate into the style or in this genre of game.
Yeah.
To the whole point of doing this in the first place is one that I would not go to voluntarily myself. A well-designed war game is hard to make, but if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know we stand hell let loose. This realistic, immersive World War II shooter that not only requires that you play well, but that your squad plays well together. And well with other squads. There's no HUD, there are no scopes, one shot and you're down. If you can't fortify, flank, and suppress as a team, you lose. And because of that, in my opinion, Hell Let Loose deserves many game awards. If that rings true and you want to help the show, consider downloading it through Gamersgate. No, not that Gamersgate. The Gamersgate that came before the controversy that hijacked the name. Gamersgate is the world's largest online store for PC and Mac games, more than 4,500 of them. And if you download Hell Let Loose or another game through designthinkinggames.com/gamersgate, it'll help us keep the lights on. I'll see you on the beach.
No, next year, we should both challenge each other simultaneously.
Yeah, yeah. I feel pretty schooled, man.
Not me sitting out or you sitting out, but we should just challenge each other. And then I think we want to say just the season's done. Thanks for listening. And we are planning to be at PAX Unplugged. And just to go, we may do some interviews that we're kind of going to get some audio interviews there. We may do some off-season stuff, or maybe we will not have stuff until season three. So we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, I think the season proper has come to an end, but we are still going to be like kind of like out in the world at PAX Unplugged, probably recording different stuff. We are working on some things that at some point we'll tell people about. But I think it's safe to say, like, hey, we appreciate like folks who find us interesting, who are at least talking to us, you know, and. Unlike other podcasts out there, it's like we definitely will be back for a season three and probably a season four, because we're very long-term planners and we have like cool stuff like coming in the future.
Yeah,
you should support us on Patreon at patreon.com/designthinkinggames. Buy an affordable and delightful advertisement. If, for instance, I don't know, consider reaching out to us with different ideas about things you want to do. What if Design Thinking Games partnered with you in some potential way? Let us imagine what the future of this little brand is as we go out. That's what we're really excited about doing. We're going out into the world together physically post-COVID.
Yeah, it'll actually be the first time we've never met in real space. Ever.
I know.
We've known each other for years and years and years, but we've never actually met in real.
Somewhere out there on the internet are like old interviews where we are talking about like library web design and stuff like
that. UX certification and
still not worth it.
I love it. One day, maybe we'll make a game about the hellscape that is libraries and make that a board game to play. I don't know.
Thank you for listening to the Design Thinking Games podcast. You only have so much time, and it means a lot you shared it with us. To connect with your hosts, Michael or Tim, visit Design Thinking Games on TikTok, Twitch, and Twitter. DMs are open. You can also check out designthinkinggames.com, where you can request topics, ask questions, or see what else is going on. Until next time, game on.